In the spring of 2002, the United Nations General Assembly held a special session on children. This session was devoted exclusively to improving the lives of children around the world. And for the first time in history, children were included as delegates to the assembly. Gabriela Arrieta, a 13-year-old girl from Bolivia, was one of these delegates and the first child ever to address the General Assembly. On behalf of children all over the world, Gabriela asked the UN on that day in May in 2002 for an end to poverty, war, hunger, malnutrition and disease, and equal access to health care and education for all children. She said to them, "We want a world fit for children, because a world fit for us is a world fit for everyone." What a wonderful organizing concept for the UN. What is best for the children is best for everyone. I believe the same is true here at People's Church. A church fit for children is a church fit for everyone. What is best for them is best for all. So what is best for children at church? What are the best parts of being in this community? I had an opportunity to ask the children about this a few weeks ago. Perhaps some of you remember. During the faith formation time, I spent half an hour with them just learning more about what they like in worship, what they don't like, and what the best parts of being here are, what the challenges are. When I said, "What are the best parts of life here?" they said, "They like making friends and being with their friends, singing, and doing fun activities with others." Oh, and the candles. They like that part the best. So, did I miss anything, guys and gals? Did I miss anything? Is that about right? Who out there can relate to this? Yes. I am willing to bet that the adults here today would come up with a very similar list if I was to ask you all what you liked about church. The best part of church are basically that. Number one, being in community of caring, loving people, otherwise known as making friends. Number two, exploring spirituality and being free to develop your faith, which can definitely include doing fun, meaningful activities with others. And number three, grounding your life in a spiritual practice and resilience that prepares you to go back out in the world ready to work for justice and equality, which clearly involves lighting a lot of candles. At least it does for me, and I think plenty of you as well. Children and adults, you see, are not so different after all when it comes to what they're looking for in church. And of course, just like adults, they're all unique and they have unique preferences. So we can't make any assumptions or blanket statements about what all children like, just like we couldn't say all adults like things this way or that way. But what we can do is approach each child as an individual, stay open, ask questions, get to know them, find out more about them and what they like, and then listen carefully. So you can ask children and youth, "Who are you? Who are you becoming? What do you love? What makes you feel the most alive? What is most sacred to you and important? What are your spiritual needs right now, and how can we help you meet them?" In case you're wondering, let me be the first to tell you that if you ask people these questions without being in relationship to them, they might look at you really funny. So the first thing to do is just be in relationship with young people, which is why the first task in faith formation is building relationship. Children have to be seen and known and loved by the community before any kind of learning or growth can occur. Well-known religious educator Maria Harris describes relationship as the central aspect of religious education or faith formation in her book, Fashion Me a People. To raise well-grounded, well-informed, spiritually healthy, and curious young people, certainly some of our goals here at People's Church, Harris argues that the curriculum the church uses cannot and should not be contained in a single book or resource. Faith formation is a process and a practice. Harris writes, curriculum is not, in any of its most important senses, reducible to resource materials, no matter how good and useful. Rather, curriculum is an activity, a practice of a people. Quality faith formation for our young people is not about doing this thing or that thing at this time or that time, finding the perfect resource, or any of that stuff. It's about being a people, being in relationship with one another, being a community and living out our core values. Our core values: community, compassion, spirituality, and justice. Harris would say, of course, that yes, faith formation includes lessons, activities, curriculum, as these things help shape us as a people, and so we do them here at 9:45 during our faith formation hour downstairs. And those things are so important. And foundationally, faith formation has to have at its center spiritual practice. That spiritual practice that gives us form and shape as a gathered people. When we do this, Harris says, we are moving towards a creative vision that sees all facets of the church's life as the church curriculum. We engage the holy, sacred work of being a congregation and communicating the passwords from generation to generation in absolutely every moment, in everything we do as a community. So what do you all think of that? If faith formation is about fashioning a people through community and spiritual practice, what would that look like here at People's Church? What spiritual practice do we do together as a community? Who knows? Sing. Yes, what else? You guys are doing it right now. Worship. Yes, worship. What we do in worship is a shared spiritual practice. It is who we are and who we are becoming. What we do here communicates the passwords from generation to generation. For it is in worship that we honor the sacred, honor that which is beyond the self. It's a time for us to learn to be less self-centered and more generous and forgiving. It's a place and a time for us to practice loving and caring for ourselves and one another. It's a time and a place for us to prepare our hearts, minds, and spirits for the work of building a better world. And here we get to mark the important milestones and engage in the meaningful rituals that make us who we are. It's a place where we find our common identity. We do all of that in worship. And all of this is good for children. So what does that mean? If it's good for children, it's good for all of us, exactly. Worshiping with children and youth is great for them, and it is good for the grown-ups. None of us, of course, lives exclusively in a world made up of one generation or demographic, but it is so easy as you go along in life to kind of find yourself in that environment where most of your friends and acquaintances are in your same generation, isn't it? That happens to me. I know that my friends are largely in the same generation as I am, and I kind of could easily spend most of my time with people around my same age. I think that can happen to folks. And so that's what makes church so special and so unique, is that this is a place where we can come and be with people from different age groups and different generations. And we can be together in all of our diversity and connect more deeply with the spirit of life. Like that image of the tire. If we're all connected to each other and connected to the spirit within, it helps when we're together. So this is what we're trying to do here at People's Church this year. It's an experiment to see if our lives will be mutually enriched by worshiping together every Sunday at this time. We're still holding those all-important faith formation classroom-style experiences for children and youth and adults at 9:45. And if you're interested in helping with adult faith formation, I would love to hear about it. RC is offering a course at 9:45, and of course David and the faith formation volunteers are down there as well. So, but then at 11, we're all here, we're all worshiping, and that has been a bit of a change for some of us, yes? Some more than others. And so a few weeks ago when I was chatting with the children, I asked them how they were feeling about all of this change, and some of them said, I don't know, I'm not sure if I like it. And I said, that's okay. That's okay. Sometimes I don't like worship. Sometimes the preacher goes on too long and I get really bored. But it's okay. It's not so much the content that matters, but the spiritual practice of being a people together in community that's important. And as we all know, spiritual practices don't always produce a spiritual high or a peak experience every time you do it. You know, every time I meditate, I don't have a peak experience. But over a lifetime, that can happen. And so what matters is returning to the practice, returning again and again, and seeing what happens over a lifetime, not just in one particular moment. So I thanked the kids for being honest with me, and I thanked them for giving worship a try, and I told them to relax, because it's not really about them anyway. The adults benefit from having kids in worship, and I'm not exaggerating. We need kids with us in worship. And so I let them know that that's so, and I'll say it again to you guys, it is so important that you're here with us, and we thank you for that. Adult faith formation needs youth mentors, child mentors, just as much as it is the opposite. Young people in worship encourage us to approach life with wonder and curiosity, keep us fresh and vibrant, and remind us that those wiggles and giggles and babbles or hiccups don't really matter all too much anyway. Babies, children, and youth have a right to be in their bodies and expressing their experience in the same way that anybody else does, wiggles and all. It's okay. So if it's not about the kids, and it's not really about the adults either, who is it about? It's about the collective. And I know that the adults, some of you might be a little nervous. I haven't actually heard too much about this, so maybe I'm off here, but maybe some of you are feeling nervous about having the kids in worship every week. And if I were to hear that, and again, I haven't heard it too much, the argument usually goes something like this. Well, you know, kids can't sit still, they're too loud, they're too distracting, and they're not really getting anything out of it anyway. So we've already addressed the wiggles and giggles, it's all good. We've invited you to relax. Check out the insert that David created today, which is in your order of service, on how to be here and relaxed in multi-generational community. And if you're worried that kids don't understand what's going on, I invite you to reconsider. Children are spiritual beings. In her book, The Gift of Faith, Jean Harrison Nwijar documents research that clearly shows children have a spiritual life whether adults participate in their spiritual formation or not. And so Nwijar calls on faith communities to be deliberate, clear, and intentional regarding the messages that children receive about religion. Children are evolving as religious beings, whether we wish it to be so or not, she says. We can choose to be active influences in this evolution, or we can leave the child vulnerable to random messages and meanings from wherever or whomever they may come. And so she would say, children understand far more about spirituality and worship than we know, perhaps far more than we ever will know. And whatever is said or done in worship that they can or don't understand is just going to go over their heads, no harm, no foul. But when the day comes when they can hear it, they will be ready because they will have learned how to worship in community. Many of today's parents, millennials and Generation Xers, raised either unchurched or tucked away from worship in a classroom, missed out on this opportunity. Nwijar writes, without regular participation in communal worship, without years of ritual and teaching, without the benefits of being in religious community, the faith of those children, today's parents, is likely to be ungrounded and inaccessible. Now, today's parents may feel grounded and centered, but Nwijar argues that that center doesn't hold in transmission to their own children. Rich religious tradition and theology are not being passed on to today's children. There may be bits of theology or ideology in their heads, but without a full context, without a cohesive core, such bits do not cohere. In this turning of the generations, we find that what we held too loosely has now slipped away. I believe a part of the solution is a regular multi-generational worship and regular faith formation classes, both at different times. At least that's what the Faith Formation Task Force discerned last year and reported back to me and to us, and so we're moving with that and seeing how it goes. So I'm not saying this model is perfect. I'm not saying that we're going to do it forever. We're just trying an experiment this year. We're just going to see how it goes. And I'm glad we're giving it a try. We can always reevaluate later in the year or next year if things aren't going the way we want them to, and we can always adjust. But we're going to give it a try, see how it goes. For beloveds, we can't afford to lose the spiritual passwords from generation to generation. If we risk this when we exclude children from worship, then it's not a risk I'm willing to take. Children and adults need multi-generational support, religious community, and theological grounding. Worshiping all together is such an important piece of that faith formation process. So if you feel nervous about this, see if you can relax. Say hello. Get to know someone younger than yourself. Try to remember that it will be okay. And if something is ever not okay, we can talk about it and we can adjust. After all, we're just figuring this out, practicing and fashioning ourselves as a people, becoming the people we want to be, becoming the beloved community. May this be so. Amen and blessed be.